Hey, welcome to the Happy Ramp Podcast. I am Ted Kluck, joined as always in studio by my good friends and partners in radio, Barnabas Piper and Ronald J. Martin. Boys, we have much to discuss this morning, but I feel like I got to get something off my chest. I got to come clean to you guys about something. I have sold out. I've sold my soul to Christian Publishing in that I'm back on the TGC horse, boys. I sold a little article to TGC. Yeah, it's big.
I thought maybe you'd gotten on Twitter and started Yoda tweeting or something. That's when
Yoda
soul, that's where my concerns immediately went.
Boys, I'm not a man of the cloth. I don't think I'm qualified to do Yoda work. I haven't been to seminary. You know, I haven't had my 300 level Yoda class, and I just don't feel called to that type of ministry yet. You know, maybe later.
Well, I mean, Dave Harvey wrote a book called "Am I Called?" Maybe it's in there. Is there an addendum chapter to that about Yoda tweeting, Ron? I don't know.
Dude, I haven't read Harv's book on calling. I probably should check that out though.
Yeah,
I think it's time.
I think it is time. Yeah, it is. It is.
Yeah, boys, I wrote a short think piece. And it's going to be the shortest thing probably that's ever run on TGC. So when I sent it in, they were like, this looks like the abstract. Where's the rest of it?
They were saying, we just got to get Joe Carter in to edit it and add some 8 or 9 points to it.
Right? Joey C is going to add about 6,000 words.
Absolutely.
And we'll be ready to go.
How many points did you make in it?
I didn't make any points. It was just kind of an essay. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not a huge point-making guy necessarily.
Oh,
but
so you just confused them is what you did.
Ted's
you
sent like, this I thing. I don't have a point.
They're like, what is this genre? Block.
They're like, I see a lot of words on here, Big T, but where's necessarily like the 5 points? So, yeah.
T, is there a point any time in your future?
I don't see a point now or in the future, baby. So maybe that's going to be problematic for them. I don't know, but we're doing that delicate dance right now of just editorial, and maybe I won't even recognize the finished product. But,
which is to say, you are just saying, don't touch that. No. Every time
exactly.
They say, well, what would you think
leave it
if
alone.
We? No, the answer is
exactly.
No.
Like, boys,
Colin,
I'm looking.
Colin, let's leave this alone, shall we?
I'm looking at my phone though, just waiting for it to ring off the hook with main stage invitations after this article drops though.
Oh, it's gonna be, it's gonna
looking
happen.
At some lake houses, you know, I mean, just the usual cycle of like TGC.
Maybe like a steak company with your earnings.
Yeah, maybe a steak company. And baby, speaking of steak companies, it looks to me from the show notes like Channy's got a little, he's got another iron in the fire. But before we get to that,
100%.
Piper, I want you to talk about our irons in the fire business-wise and a great business partnership that we have in the works. So lay that on us, baby.
Yeah, we need to talk about our business before we get to Matt Chandler's businesses.
He can
be second on this one. Our sponsor for this episode is the Christian Standard Bible, particularly the He Reads Truth and She Reads Truth Bibles. Those are separate Bibles, folks. They're sort of study/devotional Bibles with an abundance of really helpful supplemental materials, timelines, outlines, book summaries, reflective notes. Not devotional in like the chicken soup for the soul way, but really reflecting on the gospel meaning of various texts. They're also maybe the most aesthetically pleasing Bibles I've seen in terms of interior layout. Just the everything from typeface to margins to everything. They're really, really nice to use. So what CSB is doing is working with us on a giveaway. They're going to give away two each of the He Reads Truth and She Reads Truth Bibles. So if you go to happyrantpodcast.com, you will see a big spot right in the middle of the page that says giveaways, and you can enter there. You pick which one you want to sign up for. And the entries are open through October 15th. So from the time this drops, that'll be just over a month. And so you've got a little bit of time, but jump on it. These are, if you just want to go ahead and buy it so you don't have to wait and see, they're available at Lifeway.com, Amazon.com, although Tim Challies might not approve, ChristianBook.com. You can get them anywhere. And they're wonderful for gifts as well. I've given 3 or 4 of these away to different people who are specifically people who have an intent to get into the Word more, but are a little bit, they're just not ready to sort of be an avid Bible scholar. So they need something to help them along the way, familiarize themselves with how to study the Bible, how to get comfortable with it. These are awesome for that. So go to happyrantpodcast.com, enter that giveaway, or go check out the He Reads Truth and She Reads Truth Bibles wherever you like to buy your books, except Amazon, so you don't get slapped down by our friendly Canadian neighbor to the north.
Piper, I'm not sure I'm comfortable with those pronouns on those Bibles, but otherwise I'm excited to check those out.
Yeah, maybe maybe I should pitch to them a We Read Truth Bible, a They Read Truth Bible.
Keep it vague. You know,
This Is My Truth Bible.
Yeah, there you go.
We could go a number of different directions. So far, though, they're remaining true to a traditional understanding of both gender and scripture, which, you know, I think we could stand behind that. I think we should still do that.
I think we can. Mm. Boys, something else that I'm excited to potentially stand behind, and this is staying in the realm of business news. I know nothing about this other than what appeared in the show notes, but it looks as though our boy, steak mogul, steak magnate, Matty Chan, also a pastor. He still does some man of the cloth work.
Pastoring on the side when he has
pastoring
time.
Pastoring on the side, yeah. Does he have a cruise, boys? Is there a Matt Chandler branded cruise? And if so, are we all going? Are we getting our berths below deck like Leo on the Titanic? Ron, you're up to speed on all things pastoral and business. Talk us through this. What are we looking at here?
Well, I don't know. So I got a so I think both me and Pipe, we got a little text from Jared C. Wilson, and okay. it was sort of like a poster flyer advertisement for Stephen Curtis Chapman and his wife have a cruise. And they invited in some special guests, one of which is Matt and Lauren Chan. And then the other guest is Scotty Smith. Yeah. So it looks like it's not necessarily a Matty Chan cruise per se. He's just going to be the special guest on Stephen Curtis's Chapman cruise, which I was like, that in and of itself seems surprising to me. I don't know anything about Stephen Curtis, you know, other than he was like the soft rock hit guy of the 80s and 90s and CCM, you know, and all that stuff. So I don't really know much about him, but the fact that he invited like Scotty Smith and Matty Chan, I thought, well, that kind of makes me rethink like Stephen Curtis a little bit. That was kind of weird to me. I mean, weird in a good way, not in a weird way, but
maybe the theme is just affluent, beautiful, evangelical white people.
Yeah, and it's probably like,
except that Scotty Smith is there, and he's like the most sort of normal, down to earth. Well, first of all, he's one of the OGs of pastoral Yoda Twitter, so that goes on his resume. But he sort of functions as like a pastor to pastors. He's probably in his late 60s, early 70s, and just he's the guy who on Twitter every Sunday morning you will see him list off a name of pastors who he knows. And not like famous people, just pastors of churches, and basically just says, I'm praying for you this morning. He does this like 6 a.m. And he just tags them, and so it's not a public fame thing. So he's the real deal. And the Chapmans
and Pipe, obviously that's one of my goals, is to get that Scotty Smith prayer on Sunday morning. I don't know that I will have arrived until
you've
I
never
wake
made
up
it
on
into
Sunday
that,
morning.
That
oh, not even close. Okay. And I get that Twitter shout out of prayer from the prayer guy. I mean, Scotty Smith is like the resident like man of prayer.
Guy?
Oh, he's the prayer guy.
When yes. and especially he's like pastoral care guy too, like caring for other pastors. And then the Chapmans they're local to Nashville, and they have a stellar reputation, both, you know, and just as in terms of theology, their Christian life, they lost a daughter in a terrible accident a few years ago. And so how they've walked through suffering, how they've, you know, their faithfulness, they support a ton of, I think they have an entire sort of adoption support ministry, or maybe it's adoption and foster care. And so they're not sort of your celebrity glitz and glam, which is why this whole thing just feels dissonant to me, because I wouldn't have pegged any of these people as headlining a cruise.
Boys, I'm not going to rest until we're headlining our own cruise. I'll just put it out there.
You've talked about that a lot, man. We've had a conversation. We've had a couple
Maybe I'm
convos about that over the years. Like, dude, you are like, you're hell bent, if I can use
I
that kind of lingo,
you can.
On this
yeah.
very conservative podcast
yeah.
About getting us to headline a cruise one of these days.
Maybe it's because I'm a boat guy. I'm a wharf guy. I love wharfs. Yeah,
you're a Navy man, is what you are.
Dude,
you're
I'm kind of a sailor. Absolutely.
The thought of living on a boat for any period of time just sounds terrible to me.
Really?
I love the water. I like going on boats. Living on a boat, I do not want to spend a night on a boat. That sounds awful to me.
I've spent nights on boats before. Yeah,
Have you guys done a cruise before?
No,
I've never done a cruise. No,
because we're doing our first cruise like next year. We've never done one. We're like the only people we know like in our like sphere here that have never
Because Ohioans, that's all they do is they go on cruises in the winter, right, in Florida. So we've never done one. And we felt like kind of pariah. Like, why are we the only person that haven't, like, experienced, like, the joy of sailing the seven seas?
Baby, are you going with the Wilsons on that cruise, that Viking cruise that they always promo before Downton Abbs, the one down the, you know, like the European thing?
Yeah, it's going to be like a B to D list cruise with a bunch of like evangelical non-celebs that only a few people have heard of. So you guys are invited.
Nice.
What is the appeal of a cruise when one could go to, say, like an all-inclusive resort and not have to spend the night on a boat?
Because I think it's like the by the way, BT Dub, I've literally asked those same questions for years because I'm like, I'm trapped on the boat now. And like, I want to have more freedom. So I guess what they do is you go to like 8 different islands and then you get to spend the day on these like kind of like exotic, like, you know, Caribbean islands, you know, depending on the cruise you do.
See,
of course.
That sounds like organized forced fun to me. Now we're on like tropical youth camp where they're like, all right, it's craft time.
Well, no. They're not. No, you don't have to do like that. You just get to walk off the boat and do whatever you want. And then you basically you sleep on the boat at night and then the boat is all inclusive. So when you get on there, man, it's all the food you want to eat, all the stuff, all anything that you want to do. And it's all kind of next level. So it's all kind of nice. So that's just kind of the – so basically you got this really nice hotel on the sea, and then during the day you're kind of stopped off on this really exotic
Caribbean
island.
You had me right up until on the sea. I like really nice hotels. I like luxury.
You know what's weird, man? I'm not a big sea guy either. I'm not a big Navy man, even though I'm the son of a Navy man, even though I'm the son of a cussing sailor Navy man. So swearing –
I'm not
Navy
one of those.
Sailor.
So you're closer to this than I am.
Yeah, but like I'm with you, man. The water thing, I'm not going to lie, man. It kind of tweaks. And like, dude, if I even stand in a swimming pool now, like I get like seasick.
So as far as I can understand it, help me understand this, Ronald. So you're going on this cruise essentially just to pander to Ohioans?
I'm pandering to all Ohioans and my wife.
Oh, I see. Okay. I got you.
Who is an Ohioan, by the way? So it still works.
Baby, do you guys feel like Ohioans now? Have you been there long enough? You know what I mean about that delicate sort of how long do you have to be in a place to be a local kind of deal? Do you kind of identify with Ohio at this point?
Dude, it's such a weird thing because I feel like I do in some ways, but I don't wake up in the morning thinking, oh, good morning, Ohioan. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was like I was talking to a dude this morning who like is a prof at Ashland University, which you have some experience with, Big T. Yeah. And he's been here 40 years and he's like,
wow.
Oh yeah, everybody kind of talks about me like I'm still like from Indiana because that's where he's born.
Well,
like,
the cultures are so different, you know.
Oh, they're Ohio, so Indiana. Wildly different.
Yeah. Worlds apart. You know?
But I'm just saying, like, dude, if they're still treating you like an outsider after 40, I don't have a prayer. Yeah. You know?
Do you think all people are like that? And I raise that question because we're rewatching Downton Abbey to kind of pregame for the movie.
Absolutely. And which is a wild move.
Dude, that show is all about, I think, upon a second viewing, it's all about like the desire to feel superior to anyone. You know what I mean? Because there's this pecking order and like everybody in the show feels like they've got a little bit of something to lord over someone else. You know what
I'm saying? You're saying the Granthams are reformed, Big T.
Well, dude, I don't know. I don't know. But I think like just baked into humans is this desire to like feel like an insider or feel superior. You know what I'm saying?
I think that's
true.
I don't
totally know what you're saying. Yeah.
I don't know how much that has to do with geography and everything. So, you know, if you're from Middle America, where the kind of place where people grow up in a small town and die in a small town, it's geography based. But if you come to a place like Nashville, where if you've been here, I've been here 6 years, as of right now, I guess I moved here 6 years today or tomorrow. I can't remember which, I feel like an old timer compared to a lot of people, but there are people who grew up here. So it's just this, it's this mishmash and there's like 80 people moving in a day. And so geography is a lot less of your superiority than, I don't know, pick your favorite thing you want to be better at than somebody else. And so it's, in smaller town Ohio, that makes sense because people are like, this is my These are my
roots. They take ownership over it. Yeah. You're in a transitory like environment. That's where I was in California. Like, no, like, dude, however, nobody asked about how long you've been in California. I mean, because everybody's moving all over the place in California. People are coming in from out of state. Like, nobody cared about that on any level. Yeah. But here it's much more like it's chest thumpy about like, dude, if you weren't born here, you don't really belong here.
Fascinating, baby. That's right.
Yeah, it's awesome too. It's great to be in that environment, by the way.
Yeah, really, for sure.
It's super really
affirming.
Fun.
Yeah.
And it's really affirming. You know, I really feel like connected to the community and the people. No, I'm exaggerating, but there is a little bit of that. But I was standing like outside today and I'd met up with a bunch of like profs from the university, and they're all from out of state. And so it was like an interesting thing to talk about like their experience being in a town that is so sort of like rooted in whether you've been born here or not and kind of always feeling like a perpetual outsider. So it's kind of interesting.
Baby, are you doing that prof hangout circuit now, man? How did that happen?
We're just doing this ministry where we like hang out like on Thursdays. We set up like donuts and coffee on one of our streets, and we just kind of fire the neighborhood. It's right around the university. So we got a lot of people coming in. They just kind of catch wind of it. They hang out. It's just a way for us to meet neighbors. But a lot of the people we live right around the university. So a lot of these people are profs. So it's actually been really fun, like, to get to meet some of these dudes.
Nice, dude.
Ron,
nice.
I respect a lot of things about you, but I think one of the ones that is highest on the list is your utter dedication to pastry ministry.
Pastries that you don't eat yourself, but then
I had a donut to free up this thing last month.
You pour so many pastry blessings into your community. It's just it's just an untold, amazing, immeasurable blessing, I'm sure, to the people around you. So yeah, I just it's every episode something comes up about you blessing somebody with pastries, and I'm picturing, you know, like you and your wife on bicycles delivering scones will forever be imprinted in my mind as like, this is the epitome of Ronnie Martin's ministry right here.
I mean, it really is. It really is the epitome. And Pipe, I appreciate those kind words. And let me just add this, boys. A dream of mine is for you guys at one point to hop in the car together, come visit Big R, and do just enjoy my pastry life here just for a day or two. Mm. So we'll talk about that. Do a live podcast here. We're going to do it.
That would be fun.
All
pastries and podcasting going to get just that would be delicious in every sense.
We could record
five pastries and podcast, man. That's the next one on the books for sure.
We can record from the back of whatever hipster bicycles, you know, Ron's riding these days. What are you looking at hipster bike wise, baby? Because I know you're not riding like a normal bike.
No, we just invested in Aventon e-bikes, man. So we're kind of like futuristic right now.
Oh, so the ones that like ride themselves, all you got to do is sit on it, basically.
Like mopeds, you still pedal them.
You're getting none of the really workout value.
No, you still get the workout value. You just go a lot faster. Mm. So that's it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Still getting the workout.
Exciting. Well, speaking of things that are exciting, my friend, my buddy, Al Mohler, Big Al. When I say my friend, I mean, I've talked to him one time and I think he fell asleep while we were talking.
You actually talked to him one time, baby?
Yeah. Yeah, dude. Oh. This was kind of at the height of like mine and Katie Y's like joint fame. And, we were speaking at the same conf as Al Mohler. And, there was a book signing. There was a little book signing like event where we all had tables and we were signing our books.
Well, this is obviously a highlight for you.
Oh, it was a huge
life highlight.
Huge life highlight. And Katie Y was like, hey, we should go over and talk to Al Mohler. And I'm like, sure, whatever. And we went over and we started to talk to him. And you know how Mohler sleeps like 4 minutes a night or whatever. His eyes were like half-lidded. Like he looked like a Garfield character. You know what I mean? And so his eyes were like, to begin with, half-lidded. And then, you know, we got a couple of sentences into whatever we were talking about. And I think he nodded off.
But, or did he just like refute every word you said?
No, he wasn't even like awake enough to refute it.
You said hi, and he said the correct thing is hello.
exactly. Dude, so Big Al supposedly, and again, I'm not on social, so I don't know this, you guys, but apparently he was throwing heaters. He was throwing fastballs on social about what makes a person a real person, implying that maybe it was being married and having some kids. You guys talk me through this, because I don't know what we're looking at here, other than I've heard bits and pieces of this thing.
Yeah, I'm looking up the actual quote. I'm gonna see if I can find it. Basically the summary was, so it was a quote I think from his podcast where he basically says, here we go. So this is from the August 27th, The Briefing. Americans are basically by the millions giving up on the fact that to be human is to be a parent, eventually to take on that responsibility, to get married and have children, to take on the responsibility of passing on civilization itself. So that was his quote. And the first reply I saw to it was something to the effect of, well, right, except Jesus, which...
oh, it's the right except Jesus.
I considered it a strong... So he served, and that was a strong volley. Like, that was just, right, back at you, Al, refute this. And I don't know that it really turned into a conversation, but I... Yeah, the statement just seemed either misspoken or sorely misguided.
And I kind of think it had to have been taken out of context. Do you think so?
Well,
It seems like it.
I mean, well, first of all, it's a quote from a podcast. People could pull so many sentences out of this podcast and get us all just like thrown into the sea with a millstone around our neck. Like, we would be dead so fast because of things that we have said. So, yes.
I'm a Worf guy, though, so I might enjoy that. That's minus true. The millstone.
Yeah, minus drowning. That part's less fun. But it could definitely be out of context. But I don't... There's a phrase in there that he just overstated it. He had to have. To be human is to be a parent. Like, really? That's just patently false.
It's just sloppy. It's like sloppy at best. I mean, it's. Yeah.
I mean, so I know that he would not look at himself and say, "Well, until I was a parent, I was not a human." Or not even like fully, or even like a.
Because I kind of found that it's been the opposite for me.
Yeah, I was going to say it felt a little bit the opposite at times.
Yeah, it just felt dehumanizing since I had my baby 24 years ago. You know?
Yeah, there's an element of like having parts of yourself just removed daily, and you're like, I'm less of a everything. I'm less rich. I'm less energetic. Yeah. I'm less fun. I'm less everything.
Just less. Yeah. My name's Ronnie Less.
But yeah, it's a. I don't know what to make of it. I know what point he's trying to make in terms of sort of the kind of fulfilling the like the Genesis mandate of humanity. But to say that to be human is very different than saying, you know, to kind of be everything that God has for you is to do this. And even that takes nuance because there are people who are not called to be parents or to be married, and that's just not in the cards for them. And so, or people whose marriages have ended, or any number of things. And so to attach humanity and dignity and value to that is wrong.
Dude, so is he like getting mega slaughtered for this? Is he getting lit up by online harpies?
The term is getting ratioed, where your replies and comments on a tweet dramatically outpace your likes and retweets. And at this very moment, he has 82 likes on this tweet, which means 82 people saved it for later to complain about with friends. 17 retweets because people wanted to comment on it publicly, and 244 comments, most of which I'm sure are disagreeing with him, but I don't want to go down that black hole because I'm afraid.
Dude, so given what you know about Al Mohler, like, how much do you think any of that like bothers him at all? Do you think he cares like one iota what like Twitter harpies are saying about him at any given moment?
I think if he cared, there's a lot of things he would have stopped doing along the way. Most of which are good. You know, he would have backed off things that he's been consistent and courageous in, some of which are maybe a bit more combative or divisive, like this. And again, I know he's trying to stand up for the sort of the Christian ideal of family, but that phrasing was not helpful.
Yeah, that just seems – yeah, I go back to what you said, Pipe. That feels like sort of a tied into Genesis, you know, mandate kind of stuff. And maybe it was just sloppy wording on his part, or you just had to read – you had to read more of the fine points of what he's saying in the context of how he said it. But yeah, that feels like somebody just grabbed that quote and just went – haywire, like, oh man, we got something.
Right. So here's the thing. It's posted from his account. So this was not a gotcha thing. Like, it's got his little podcast logo on and everything. So here's what
it was like a pullout quote. It was like a little
So here's what I'm almost positive happened. He does not do his own pullout quotes because no significant figure does, especially not when there are graphics involved. So that means one of his lackeys, for lack of a better term, his associates, who the dark suit wearing Southern Baptist Seminary crowd, one of them grabbed this because they're like, ooh, that's punchy, and just didn't think through the implication. Now, which puts him in the position of either being forced to stand by this, defend it, give context, whatever, or ignore it. But he didn't post this himself, but his name's on it. So, I mean, it's his responsibility. But yeah, literally every reply is either what about Jesus, or I couldn't have kids, am I less of a child, or et cetera, et cetera. And yeah, there's not a single, and most of them are relatively gracious in terms of they're making a point as opposed to, you know.
Dude, what's wrong with Mueller's lackey? He needs to know that, like, it's 2019, man. Like, everybody's just on Twitter, like, roaming about waiting for someone to devour. Like,
so here's
why
the thing.
Why would you do that?
Lackeys, yeah, so followers are always crazier than the leader. Always.
Yeah.
And,
dude, yeah, right.
And
right.
If they're not crazier, they're just less discerning, especially right. when somebody like Mueller, who is, I don't know, middle-aged-ish, mm-hmm. starts bringing in 24-year-olds to be his lackeys, which is what seminarians are often. Like, at 24, I was an idiot. I still often feel like one now. And I think we see this with Desiring God. We see this with any number of ministries where the followers are going to take the most distilled, concentrated, and sometimes stilted version of a message and throw it out there, as opposed to the kind of the holistic view of how things are nuanced and fit together and what the point was he was really trying to make was. And yeah, there's just not the awareness of the consequences of this are that he will just get dragged for days.
Yeah. Yeah. I would think though that like a 24-year-old lackey, if anyone would have an innate understanding of how social media works today.
I think if that was true, 24-year-olds would leave social media.
Yeah, that's true. Like anybody who had a really innate understanding of it would probably leave it. But yeah, fascinating, man. Interesting, interesting Mueller stuff. Interesting to see how this works. Boys, we have a couple more minutes, and I want to get into a little more serious one. And this is the idea of counseling versus close friendships. And Pipe, you're going to have to tee this one up because, again, this came from a series of tweets or a conversation that happened on Twitter, I think, about how, like, so many people are leaning on counseling, but maybe what they really need is just like close, authentic friendships. And I'll preface this by saying that like I'm not in any way anti-counseling. Like we've had an incredible biblical counseling experience that really helped us out in a super rough time. So I do ride with that idea, but I think there's something to this too. So Piper, tee it up for us.
Yeah. So the interaction started. So Richard Clark, who's a friend of mine, also he works at Christianity Today, and he put out some thoughts. And again, all of this is not a combative thing. This is much more wrestling through the value of different kinds of relationships. So he said, I recommend counseling to literally everyone, but I've become convinced that counseling is necessary in particular for those who live in the suburbs, where building consistent, genuine, ongoing community outside of the home is an uphill battle, to say the least. So he's coming from sort of a cultural particular. In the suburbs, people are more isolated, more lonely, so counseling seems more necessary. Then a lady who I don't know, named Danae Hudlow, retweeted that and added some thoughts. And she said, I've been having this thought a lot recently. I find myself recommending counseling a lot, but I think that's because it seems like so few people have brothers and sisters in Christ that they can talk to about the deepest things, process emotion with, and seek wisdom from. So she takes it out to just the broader relational context, not so much the suburban context. But yeah, I just – when I saw her tweet first and Richard second, and I've had similar thoughts because, you know, having gone through some challenging things over the last few years, I have met with counselors, sometimes consistently, sometimes here and there. Honestly, finding a counselor feels a lot like blind dating. You know, you just sort of get set up and you're like, boy, I hope this goes well because I'm about to go bare my soul and I hope they don't stink at this or be awkward or whatever. And I've had really mixed results. Never anything hurtful, but sometimes it's like, well, that was just like lighting $100 on fire. And sometimes it's been very beneficial, but I have not felt as dependent on counselors as I've seen some other people be. because I do have a circle of relationships who I can call, text, you know, grab a drink with, whatever, to talk through the hard things of life. And so that does ease the that sort of the self-eating self-pressure that often needs to be taken to a counselor of just the, you know, the emotional, spiritual stuff. Now, if you're in a crisis situation, professionals have, you know, they have a unique training and ability to help with that.
Boys, do we agree that like community is harder in the suburbs? I guess that's the part of this that I'm the most interested in at this point. Because it's, I guess in the mid 2000s, it was really popular to crap on the suburbs and everything was all like, oh, the city.
Yeah, it's still the same, by the way.
Is it still the same?
I mean, in my world, it is. Yeah, the suburbs are like, you know, in church planning world and all that, the suburbs are just like the worst.
Oh, dude, yeah, nobody's planning a church in
there. They're like, they're not even human. They're less.
Oh, they're less than human. Yeah, they're it's
even
0%.
Even though they're all parents, that's where people go when they become parents.
They have kids.
Exactly, they're less. They're the worst, but they're the most human. I don't know. I'm so confused right now.
Yeah, everything's muddy. I think community. I don't think community's harder in the suburbs than it is in the city. I think patterns of life, you know, because the suburbs are where families move. So you've got kids in different schools and soccer and dance and swim and whatever else. So life is nuts. But my guess is if you asked a 32-year-old single professional who lives in Manhattan, how easy is it to have community, they would feel isolated, miserable, lonely often.
Sure.
And I don't know that, you know, ask a couple who lives in a, you know, transitional living home. And they're on the independent side, but they're moving towards the assisted living. I bet they feel isolated. I don't know that the suburban aspect is more true. I definitely think that if you just take a step back and look at the point Danae made, that I think people need counseling because they lack close relationships. I think that's sort of I think that's 100% true.
I agree.
I've known two or three people. Tell me if you guys have run across these people who they have regular appointments with a therapist, and if I ask why, they're just like to process things.
Well, oh yeah, dude,
and I know so people like that. Their therapist is essentially their close friend, and so there's not an end in mind.
Yeah.
And to me, when I hear therapy, I think you are working towards a goal of some kind, like a healing goal, a working through this, arriving at a place of health. I mean, that's how physical therapy works. That's how, you know, somebody has a stroke and they're going through therapy to regain functionality.
Sure.
But for some reason, counseling therapy seems like it's just potentially an ongoing loop of conversation.
Yeah, no, I know people exactly like that. Therapy is almost like the buddy that they have the long talk with. And I don't know what to think about it. I tend to be more like you, Pipe, in the sense of just thinking that, like, therapy or counseling is sort of a episodic kind of event. But I think, again, though, I think for younger people or people who are reared in a certain kind of mindset, like it's almost a lifestyle. You know what I mean? It's almost a way of life in the same way that, like, I don't know, for affluent white people of our ilk, talking about the Enneagram for hours is just a thing that you do, whereas it would seem ridiculous to somebody else. You know what I mean?
Well, I think too, it's like, those are good points. I think for, thinking about it in the sense that a lot of people, you know, they don't have people they can have meaningful conversation with that may have been their pastor back in the day. And for some people that, you know, especially for people that don't go to church, but they need to have that kind of outlet to express themselves, to maybe cry, or to even know how to think through things or how to express things. Mm-hmm. And so a counselor just like helps them, you know, kind of unload those things that are stressors in their lives. Whereas maybe, like, you know, if you go back a certain number of years, it would have been their pastor to be able to do that with them. But there's less of that now because there's less churchgoers. So they feel like, hey, why do I need to go to church? I have this therapist that doesn't judge me, that's not preaching at me, but allows me to kind of surface some things that are hurting.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a great point.
Yeah. The times I've invested in counseling have always been to resolve an unresolvable problem or a problem that I couldn't figure out how to resolve, you know, relational problem, emotional problem, spiritual problem. But always with the idea that I would like to stop doing this.
Yeah.
You know,
not with the idea that, like, this is something I'll be doing for the rest of my life.
Right. I wanted to get to the point where the person who is a neutral third party who's outside my life says, I think you're in a good spot now. I think you know, I think you've developed practices, perspectives.
It's affirmation.
So that I can then leave and kind of feel peaceful about stepping out on my own, like, okay, I have gained strength, skill set, whatever it is. And it doesn't seem like people use counseling that way. It does seem like it is filling a void. I mean, people absolutely use it that way. It seems like more and more people are using it to fill a void rather than get to a better place in life, health-wise, whether it's emotional, spiritual, relational, whatever it is. And that's really odd to me. And again, maybe that's because I'm functioning from a place of I've been really blessed with good friends who I can talk through hard things with, be honest about things with, kind of do the muddy processing of things where you're like, I don't know how to think about this, and just sort of dump a bunch of stuff out and have them either tell me you're an idiot or, you know, encourage me or help me think through things. And yeah, maybe I'm a little more harsh on it because I have had that, and other people feel very isolated. I'm not sure.
Maybe you're more harsh on it because you have this podcast pipe, because we have everything we need contained in
right
this
here.
Weekly, in this weekly meeting. Voice. I mean, what are we even? We're the last people to talk about what we need or what anybody else needs. We have everything. We have everything.
We are each other's counselors in a sense.
That's both the best and worst thing I've heard this week.
Absolutely. It's mysterious that way, Piper. It's meant to be mysterious. And boys, we are always mysterious on this program. It's one reason why people love us. It's one reason why they should race to iTunes and give us a 5-star review so that we can be on the charts in different countries, which is a thing that I like. And I like doing this podcast, boys. I'm just going to say it. So we have done what we always do in this program, in that we have wandered to and fro throughout these topics. And until next time.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
Have you ever felt conflict between your faith and feelings? If so, you're not alone. My name's Carly Mercouillier. I'm a licensed therapist and the host of the Therapy and Theology podcast, where we explore popular topics and questions related to faith, feelings, and spiritual formation. I want to invite you to join me every Thursday as we fearlessly name the complexities of our reality, grow in the awareness of who we are, and rediscover the power and purpose of our unique stories through the lens of the gospel. Subscribe today at lifeaudio.com.